The flip to Tyreek Hill on the end around, coming right to left, turns it up 35 to the 30, far side 20, down to the 15, cuts back right 10, inside the 5, spinning into the end zone, touchdown Kansas City! Tyreek Hill with a 36-yard touchdown run, and the Chiefs have taken a 13-0 lead in the opening quarter.
Rams are going to go for it on 4th and goal at the 1. Up by 8, Goff under center, turns, gives to Anderson, Anderson over the left side, and he's in for the touchdown! C.J. Anderson barrels over for 6 as Sean McVay rolls the dice, and he gets a touchdown!
Gritty on a give, Michelle slicing up the middle, Michelle, spin move into the end zone, touchdown! The hat trick for Sony Michelle, and the rout is on in Foxborough.
Foles gets the ball, quick slant. Oh, it's through the hands of Alshon Jeffrey and picked up on the ricochet by Lattimore. He intercepts the ball, 25-30, comes to the near side, 35. It's an interception, it goes right through the hands of Jeffrey. The Saints have intercepted on the ricochet.
Mad Radio on Sports Radio 610. That was an entire weekend of NFL games that you heard right here on Sports Radio 610, your home of the NFL. Mike, Seth, and me, Paul Gallant, rolling with you all the way up until 10 this morning. Yes, till 10 on a Monday. And look, I think a lot of people understand that Sports Radio 610 is the home of the Houston Texans and that we do tend to be a tad Texans-centric. And since there's not going to be that 8 to 10 show, well, we're just going to plop some Texans right in your face. How are we going to do that? Well, let's enter the Texan spin zone, everybody.
You are now in the Texans spin zone.
How can we apply the divisional round of the NFL playoffs to the Houston Texans? I think there are a lot of things that you can do. How about we just start off with the obvious one, guys? You got to get a bye week. I mean, you just have to get a bye week. And you can't screw up when you have a chance at a bye week. It's so obvious. I mean, if you have a game on your plate, yes, against the Philadelphia Eagles on the road. I know, it's tough. Philadelphia's been playing really well at the end of the season. Gotta win that game. You just gotta win it. Gotta find a way to execute down the stretch. You can't, when you have an opportunity like that, it is sitting in your lap. And the Texans, I mean, you saw the Patriots lose the Dolphins in that crazy game just a week before. You gotta take advantage.
I guess the question would be, okay, if the Texans had a bye week, what would the scenario have been? If they had the number 2 seed, they would have faced the Pats.
Patriots would have been here.
Pats at home. The Pats are a completely different team at home than on the road this year specifically.
I mean, listen.
I know Tom Brady thinks the world hates them, which they do. I mean, like, he's true. Like,
the world does hate them, yes. The world does.
Yeah.
I think the Texans would have lost.
Yeah.
Not a shocking statement. But I think this more applies to, like, the future. If you want to win the Super Bowl and be a contender, you need to get the bye. The last time a team was in the Super Bowl, the last time a team played a championship game and played on the first weekend was 6 years ago. Otherwise, 1 and 2 seeds.
Plus, I think that the very fact that the Texans couldn't retain that number 2 seed was exactly, like, everything happened for the right reasons as down the stretch there. The Texans didn't deserve the 2 seed. They weren't a good enough team. They didn't play well enough.
0-3 start, too.
Yes. Right, they had that 0-3 start. But also, like, when you can't retain it down the stretch like that in very winnable games, then okay, there's something wrong there. Would you rather have gotten trounced by the Colts at home in the divisional playoff round or got trounced by the Patriots at home in the divisional round?
Patriots.
I guess I would have preferred that. Yeah, that's at least a somewhat expected outcome.
It's a step forward. Hey, at least you got the bye week, and then maybe you do something that the Indianapolis Colts would typically do, where they raise a banner like AFC Final Four, which the Colts theoretically could do after their season came to an end. No more 1-0 flags for them.
Did they adjust that flag to a 1-1 flag?
I think they burned it, yes.
1-1 flag outside of Lucas Oil.
The flag never happened. You got to have a quick start. And this Texans team is so bad out of the gates that in the worst possible spots, whether it's against the Indianapolis Colts or it's against the Kansas City Chiefs, it feels that when they have an off day, you know right away. And you just can't afford, just like we saw with the Colts. I mean, once the Colts were down multiple touchdowns, that one felt like it was over. It didn't feel like Indy had the juice to do it. And the Patriots, that game, it felt like it was also over at halftime, too, where they were up 35-7.
I would say this. I agree with you in theory. Like, obviously, it's ideal to have a fast start, but you also have to be a good enough team to have a fast start. Like, The Saints didn't have a fast start in that game at all. Ultimately, they prevailed because they were the better football team and they were playing at home. So I more go back to, all right, if you're a genuinely good offense, it's a hell of a lot easier to go out and pounce on people early on. If for whatever reason you don't get that fast start, it's easier to claw your way back into it. Like the Texans they just aren't quite there yet on the offensive side yet to where they can overcome that fast start. If they get to be a better football team, I'm not as concerned about the fast start.
As I continue to spin things that the Texans could learn from the divisional round of the playoffs and apply to them going forward, this is something I noticed more in the Kansas City game than in any other game. And I was surprised when I saw it from the Kansas City Chiefs, because I look at their defensive backs and I just don't think much of them. In fact, I don't know who any of them are. The Chiefs corners made plays on the ball. Now, part of that might have been that Andrew Luck just wasn't on his A game in this game, and he was throwing it to guys who were a little bit covered. But I felt like Kansas City had guys in the secondary that could come up and make plays on the football. And I think part of the reason that you don't see that a whole lot from the Texans is the scheme, because they play a lot more zone than they play man with the guys that they have. And, of course, their personnel is not great. That said, I mean, Kansas City's personnel isn't very good either.
I'll agree with this, because I would say the similarity with a lot of the teams that won is, regardless of how good these corners may be, you can tell their defensive coordinators have a lot of belief in them. You can tell that, you know, Stephon Gilmore isn't always that good. He gave up some plays yesterday, but it's very clear the Patriots trust him. It's clear the Saints trust Marcus Lattimore. And, I mean, the Chiefs was the real outlier, because they played Indianapolis man-to-man across the board, and they were really good. But you can tell that their defensive coordinators have a lot of belief in those cornerbacks.
Yeah. I guess the problem is that you can be opportunistic in zone defense. Like, that's where you actually, because you have your eyes in the backfield, you can read routes, you can jump routes. You just have to...
Doesn't it feel like Jonathan Joseph is the only person who is even remotely capable of that, though, in the Texans secondary?
But that, again, comes down to, like, okay, why are we advocating more man defense if we don't have the players that can play man defense? Like, you need guys that can actually play
man. That's what I mean. I'm not saying necessarily play more man. I'm saying you need guys that actually have the ability to do those things. You need guys who can make plays on the ball. I mean, you haven't had it. Kevin Johnson wasn't doing it. Kareem Jackson is more of a tackler. Like, well, that's the problem with the Texans, I think, cornerbacks right now, is that the really good ones are really good at coming up and stopping a play from being a long yard after a catch kind of situation.
The thing is that you can be opportunistic playing zone if you have a really good pass rush up front.
Yes.
And they never really had that really good pass rush up front. Like, you have to force the ball to come out early so guys can jump those routes, and the Texans' defensive backs never felt good doing that. There were stretches where they became an opportunistic defense,
but not
it's just
late.
They're not overall, the overall talent level just isn't there.
Marshawn Lattimore, not Marcus. Bad job by me.
As I continue to spin things from the divisional round of the NFL playoffs back to the Houston Texans, a thing that they can learn from what they saw this weekend. You got to be able to throw things at the opposition that they don't see coming, and it never feels like we see that with the Texans. And that's why I understand why there is so much frustration with Bill O'Brien and maybe with Romeo Crennel as well. I mean, what New England did against the Los Angeles Chargers defensively, I did not see that coming. I did not think that they would be like, you know what? Let's just go straight man against all these giant Los Angeles Charger wide receivers, and let's see if Philip Rivers can actually get anything done. Give a lot of credit to J.C. Jackson, who is a guy that, I mean, the Patriots, like, they scooped him out of the trash, essentially, and they've turned him into a really good player. And, of course, as you guys mentioned, they have Stephon Gilmore, too. But I'm trying to think of, guys, the last time that, whether it was on offense or on defense, the Texans came into a game and did something that we have not really seen before. Maybe it's last season when they first started doing those, like, little motion concepts as part of the offense with Deshaun Watson. Everything has felt like I've seen it before.
Well, I guess my biggest problem, I almost would go the opposite direction and say, like, I'd like to have them have some kind of semblance of bread and butter, but they don't, because we've seen everything before, because they try something different every week, and it's always just, and it's a mishmash of offensive linemen and tight ends and running backs not knowing who they're supposed to block. And, like, both in the running and the passing game. And this is what stood out to me more than anything. I'm watching this, and these are four of the best offensive lines in football that are left in the playoffs right now. But I'm watching these teams operate, and I'm like, oh my gosh. Look at how crisp and concise everything
the
is.
The execution.
Look at this blocking. Yes, look at them picking up the blitz. Like, look at the aptitude. Just simple aptitude. And it has nothing to do with physically dominating the guy across the line of scrimmage from you. It's just flat out hitting the right spot at the right time. And the Texans are just, they're nowhere near these other teams when it comes to that. I don't care about whatever happened to the Colts. I'm talking about the four remaining teams. Like, the Texans are nowhere near. Like they're better. For now, at least, like, maybe it's not Mike Devlin. Maybe it is. I don't know. These teams look a lot better coached than they're in the playoffs still.
as we continue to go down a list of things that maybe the Texans can take away from this weekend that they saw from other teams, you got to have a stable of running backs. I mean, first off, the Los Angeles Chargers brought in C.J. Anderson towards the end of the season, and C.J. Anderson was very productive for them. Is that because of the Rams' offensive line? Is that because of Sean McVay? Or is C.J. Anderson actually a talented player that probably would have been better suited to be on the field than we saw Deontay Foreman at the end of the season, or Alfred Blue at any point during the year? And the same thing with the New England Patriots. I mean, Sony Michel's a first-round rookie, of course, and James White's a former first-round pick. But, I mean, think about all the touches that those guys got. Sony Michel had 20-plus carries. James White had 15 receptions. And you also have Rex Burkhead in the mix as well for them. And for the Texans right now, you have Lamar Miller. You sometimes have Alfred Blue doing positive things, but for the most part, he's like a meh player.
Yeah.
You just don't have that. This is something that they can fix later in the draft, but they have to find the right guys. They can't have a Tyler Irvin kind of guy that comes in here and doesn't do anything.
Well, for me, I don't think this is like a thing that's like the key to get to a conference championship game, but it's more just a way for your offense to get better. And when you watch these teams play, they don't have Alfred Blues or different position, but Ryan Griffin's out there. I mean, like when you look at backup running back in the NFL, it's such a high supply position. There are so many running backs that are out there.
You should always be looking.
Yeah, not great ones or very good ones. Those are special, obviously. It's like Zeke and Todd Gurley and those kind of guys, right? But the other guys, like these Damian Williams types, you can't have a guy like Alfred Blue on your roster for 5 years and not find some way to upgrade. You want someone who's faster, who's quicker to be your backup running back. Someone who provides something a little bit different.
You would think when they got rid of Tyler Irvin that they would have at least seen somebody of that that's in that ilk.
Right.
Buddy Howell, I mean,
he didn't get a carry.
Right. I mean, he's someone that they clearly don't even view as a running back. Like, he's a special teams player that happens to be listed at that running back position. And I don't know how that, like, I still am trying to figure out what happened with Deontay Foreman, just the way that they handled it, because it just felt messy the whole way through. Like, they never had a concrete plan.
I think the Deontay Foreman thing was this. I think the Texans erred in anticipating him to come back. Like, at any level, I think with an Achilles, you just can't predict whether it's going to be good or bad. And then I think that there's a good chance that Deontay Foreman also maybe didn't approach his rehab as aggressively and vigorously as they would have liked. The problem is, even if he had approached it as aggressively and as vigorously as they would have liked, that's still no guarantee that he could have come back from an Achilles tendon in one calendar year and been an effective running back. So I'm with you there. The one thing I would say is I always get nervous in comparing any team to the Patriots and how they do things. Because for one, if Lamar Miller were running back up with the Patriots this year, he might have 12 touchdown receptions. Like, it's just they flat out know how to use the running backs in a way that other teams simply don't. And that's not even a criticism of Bill O'Brien and the Texans. That's more of a compliment to the Patriots.
100% right. But, you know, having been a part of that organization for such a long time, you think you'd be able to have some idea of how to find a running back instead of getting really excited over a Chris Polk type or something like that day.
But my point is, like, Deion Lewis, okay, how great of a... Like, people...
Would he be good anywhere else? You're right. Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh my gosh, the Titans have Deion Lewis. I'm like, yeah.
Calm down. Yeah.
I still like Deion Lewis.
Let's sack up James White's numbers next to Deion Lewis this year, though. And this is where James White has to spread it around with other guys like Sony Michel. I'm guessing, off the top of my head, I bet James White has at least twice as many touchdowns as Deion Lewis this year, combined rushing and receiving. Maybe I'll go and say three times as many touchdowns rushing and receiving.
Especially as they were weaning Edelman back in.
As Deion Lewis, yeah.
Possible.
As Mike looks that up, to wrap it all up, and we can continue this, text in 713-572-4610. And I know that Mike and Seth, I know you guys have a couple that you wanted to throw in there as well. You got to have a chip on your shoulder. And yes, this is lame, this is cliche, blah, 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 blah. The Patriots are pissed off going into this game. And I feel like the Texans, when they come into a game, do they ever seem angry? Do they ever seem ticked off? Do they ever seem like, oh, wow, like, oh, how dare T.Y. Hilton say those things? I don't know. I didn't feel like, for all the things that Tyrann Mathieu gets upset about, you would think that Tyrann Mathieu would, like, be going into that game saying, you know what, I'm going to take T.Y. Hilton's head off.
I think they do, and actually, if in anything, it worked to their detriment against the Colts. I think, like, in a lot of the reasons that maybe the Texans played
too focused,
like, they
on
weren't
that?
Ready for the playoffs was that they were a little, like, they weren't handling, they didn't keep their composure in the playoffs. And they're not capable of doing it. That was the worst thing, is like, all right, yeah, you want to talk smack, T.Y. Hilton, we'll show you, except that, like, you know they're not capable of handling T.Y. Hilton.
Looking at the games this weekend and things that the Texans can learn, Paul had a list of a bunch of different things, including better running back stables. You got to get a bye. You got to get a quick start. Make sure your cornerbacks and guys in the secondary can make plays on the ball. I want to add to the list. I mean, Paul points out the bye. to me, when you look at, I mean, offense is the theme of these conference title games. Patriots, Chiefs, and Saints against the Rams. For the top five offenses by Football Outsiders DVOA stats are remaining in the postseason. The other thing, and I looked this up last night after the games came to an end, they're actually pretty balanced. It's not like they're like lopsided, great passing attacks and mediocre or lousy running games. All four of the teams left run and pass very, very well. Another random thing is if you look at early down success rate, the rankings this season in the regular season went 1 Saints, 2 Rams, 3 Chiefs, 4 Patriots. Early down success, like first down, second down.
This is where it gets into like, okay, the Texans always run on first down, which isn't completely true, but they are among the league leaders in running in first down. And this is where the stats sometimes you can go a little too deep into it or not deep enough. Part of the reason that the Patriots run on first down so much, or some of these other teams, is because they have healthy leads. So they get into the second down. Like, they're always showing, like, hey, look at the Patriots. They have this year's a little bit different because they definitely relied on the rush a little bit more. But, like, let's say in previous years, people would say, look at the Patriots and how much they run the ball. Balanced offense, that's the key. Well, no, they were running the ball in the second half a lot because they had healthy leads in the second half. And that's still some of what it was going on this year. So, The Texans can't rely on the run game. This is why I got so angry the one day when we were talking about it, where somebody was trying to point out, whoever it was in here.
McClain was not alone. I mean, there were a lot of people that were claiming this running game was really, really good, and it was above average.
They were just, I would submit that it wasn't above average. It was that they ran the ball a lot versus bad rushing defenses. And that when it came time where they had to truly run the ball versus teams that were committed to stopping the run and could do it, they were really, really bad. Let's remember, the last four games of the season, Deshaun Watson was the leading rusher in each of those games.
Yes.
The running backs were averaging like 1.7 yards per attempt. It wasn't just a mediocre rushing attack by the Texans down the stretch. It was an atrocious rushing offense. So then the question becomes, all right, how do you become just an average rushing offense? Same old story. Okay, offensive line. Tight ends blocking. I showed you guys on Sports Extra last night a breakdown of one of the Rams' running plays, and this didn't have anything to do with them knowing the Cowboys' slanting lineman on this specific play. The tight end, Tyler Higbee, who he's listed at 245 pounds. I'm guessing he's 245 at best. Like, he's 6'6", 245 pounds. It was a stroke of brilliance on this end-around play where he put the defensive end from the Cowboys in such a bind where the guy flat out didn't know what to do, that Tyler Higbee blocked the defensive end without touching him at all, and then ran downfield and then tried to block somebody else that didn't get the block. But it was just like, it was a level of attention to detail and skill and acumen that the Texans need to get to somehow. Part of it's coaching, part of it's the fact that your tight ends are either young or limited in their blocking skills, but you gotta get to that level. Like, you're not even in the conversation with those teams until I start to see some things on film that look like the offensive line and the tight ends flat out know what the hell they're doing blocking. They look confused so often.
As far as the tight ends are concerned, Seth, that's not good, because, I mean, we saw them play Jordan Akins and Jordan Thomas less as the season went on. It felt like down the stretch they weren't comfortable with them blocking.
They weren't picking up on the nuances, right? And they were lost at times. And again, that's where the team can't be full of morons. Like,
well,
they
that's
simply
the thing.
Can't. But yet they're not executing the mental side of the game properly, and that's why I feel like that has to come back to coaching or player selection. And look, Jordan Akins and Thomas are both rookies and selections of Brian Gain.
Yes.
Are they dumb, or are they not being coached properly?
That's the thing that upsets me, because, I mean, think about this. If you put yourself in O'Brien's shoes, it's been 5 years of this, where who have they made into a really good blocker at tight end? Like, Fedorowicz was decent at times, but he wasn't like some unbelievable blocker at tight end consistently. Like, don't you have to sit in your office and be like, okay, if my tight ends are not executing my blocks, something is wrong here.
Or
either
Prosh, too. I've looked at any of the non-offensive line guys who are supposed to block, including Jay Prosh for however many years they stuck around with him. They weren't good blockers.
It's like if you're hiring people at a company, there's some specific job they have to do, and for 5 years you keep hiring people, and they're not doing that part of the job, and yet you feel like, well, I'm hiring people who seem qualified, who seem like they went to good schools or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, don't you have to think, like, what am I doing wrong? Or is there something wrong with the system where you're like, something is off here because these people can't do this little part.
You don't even get the chance to say, what am I doing wrong? You're out of a job, typically, if you've screwed up that many times.
Yeah. Remember early in that Rams game when the one offensive line, it might have been Sullivan in the center, when he actually was standing around because there was nobody left to block. It was like they had completely so decimated
Everyone's
the
dead.
Cowboys. And he messed up. The running back ran right into his back. It's the exact opposite of the Texans. A lot of times you'll see guys standing there almost like frozen because they don't know who to block. And they've got to flat out figure out a better way to do this. If I'm looking at the Patriots offensive line, they had one of the best offensive lines in football. It really doesn't necessarily have a whole lot to do with their personnel. Their left tackle, Trent Brown, was a guy that they got at a relative. They traded
third
for him,
round
did they
pick,
not?
And yeah. he's in the last year of his rookie contract, so he's making like 1.9 this year.
Right.
Texans could have gotten him if they wanted to.
Oh, they totally could have. Now, Trent Brown, it was interesting because Trent Brown, physically, athletically, and everything, was a lot like Orlando Brown Jr. that went to the Ravens. They're very, very similar. And, like, not real athletic, but they flat out, they're huge, and they get the job done. With the Patriots, look, everybody knows this. Dante Scarnecchia is their offensive line coach. He's flat out one of the best ever. And offensive line coach, as many people have noted, and I've believed for a long time, offensive line coach might be the most valuable, like, non-offensive coordinator position on your team. Like, or non-coordinator. It just, they can do so much with guys in terms of technique and knowledge and what have you. And right now, there's no evidence of anything looking like Dante Scarnecchia's work with the Texans.
Yeah, see, this is, I think, the big problem. It's very clear Bill O'Brien likes Mike Devlin a lot.
Yeah.
But what have we seen from Mike Devlin? Really, like, point to one individual case study as a success story for Mike Devlin. You can't. I mean, you can't even do it with Nick Martin. Nick Martin seems like he's regressing.
He's turned Kendall Lamb from a horrible player into like a below average player.
Yeah, there you go.
That might be the best case study.
But it took them 4 years to realize that Kendall Lamb might not be that good, remember? Remember Kendall Lamb? Like, wow, he plays tight end sometimes and he's a hell of an interview. He'll probably be a great choice for starting week one.
He's a good interview, though. 208 guy texts in DWIattorney.com text line, sort of along these lines. Have the Texans tried to get Mike Munchak as their assistant head coach or O-line coach?
Well, he's interviewing for the offensive coordinator job, or was interviewing for the offensive coordinator job for the Broncos, was
yes.
he not? After the Broncos. If you guys haven't been paying attention.
It's bizarre.
It's bizarre.
Okay, let me try to break it down simply. Kubiak was in line to become the offensive coordinator.
Correct.
Talks fell apart, partly because it appears that Kubiak wanted to bring back Rick Dennison and tight ends coach Brian Perriani.
The old crew.
look, Dennison, I've got nothing to say about. Perriani, I'll just say this. Perriani was... He did not command the respect of the locker room. And Brian Perriani's attachment, like Gary Kubiak's devotion to Perriani for so many years has been one of the most curious things in sports to me.
Yes.
And for whatever reason, he might have actually blocked Kubiak from getting this job because reportedly Elway didn't want Perriani back. I don't know what the hell the deal is.
The weird part is that Elway has worked in the Broncos building every week since, you know, stepping away 2 years ago.
Yeah.
They had to know, like, Gary's brought his guys with him everywhere.
Yeah.
When he was hired with the Ravens a couple years ago, he brought all those guys with him. How is this not a foreseen thing?
I know. There might be a chance that Peyton Manning might have had a conversation with Elway at some point about, like, how the hell are you guys coaching these
tight
ends?
Who are these guys?
What is going on? Like, what is the coaching these guys are receiving? Because various tight ends that have been coached for the Texans might tell you not much. But I'll leave it at that. Mike Munchak, I'm guessing, wants to be back with the Steelers because that's why he ended up with the Steelers in the first place. He's one of the very best offensive line coaches of the past two decades.
Yes.
And I think this is leverage. I don't know why they didn't lock him up already, the Steelers. It's one more thing that makes you wonder about what the hell's going on with the Steelers.
I really want to jump in and say, what's going on with the Steelers and what's going on with the Broncos? Yet here I am looking at the DWIattorney.com text line going into the segment. I'm like, whatever with the Texans coaching staff. And so someone texts in, Tim Kelly's getting talked about as being the next offensive coordinator. And I mean, the tight ends haven't gotten better with him. And I'm thinking of Mike Devlin. And I'm thinking of the offensive line. Oh, this coaching staff.
I don't know.
How am I supposed to feel good about it going forward? Like, what am I supposed to look at right now and say, hey, man, yeah, they're in the right direction.
I will tell you this. I will answer your question directly by saying this. If they improve the offensive line, the offense will be dynamite next season. Dynamite, especially
if they actually improve the personnel.
Yes, I'll tell you. And what's going to happen is, because I know how these things work, if they improve the offensive line, it's like mediocre. They will be excellent offensively, and people will say next year, hey, all Bill needed was a decent offensive line, and they could put together a good offense.
So, but how are they going to get to that, the first part?
I mean, that's what I'm worried about.
You leaped over the part.
That's what I'm worried about.
You said this is what's going to happen.
Step one.
It's going to improve the offensive
line. Step three.
Did I say this is what's going to happen?
Or step two.
I believe so.
Well, this is what could happen.
Oh, okay.
This is
what could happen. That's a whole different deal.
Yes, this is what could happen.
See, that's the problem. It's like the step two process.
It's all simple, Paul. Here's what's going to happen. They're going to make it to the conference championship next year. And then we'll have a discussion. Whoa, wait a second. How are they going to get to the conference championship?
It doesn't matter. Just step two.